My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rachel Zoe, and you're listening to Climbing in Heels. This show is all about celebrating the most extraordinary superwomen who will be sharing their incredible journeys to the top, all while staying glamorous. One of the best parts about doing my podcast is learning more about so many amazing women that I am lucky enough to call friends. Our guest this week, Melinda Spiegel of Melinda Maria Jewelry, is an incredible jewelry designer. And when I tell you her story is so unique, inspiring, and entertaining, I promise you, I'm not lying. You are going to agree with me. Melinda is truly the epitome of a go-getter, a hustler. Her passion, her ambition, her positivity is truly part of everything that she touches. I'm so excited for you to hear her incredible story and to learn more about how she grew her incredible business that is loved, worn, and adored by celebrities and the masses alike. So let's get right into it. You are going to love this episode. I started climbing in heels because, just like you, I'm surrounded by the most incredible women that do amazing things and like have all really climbed to the top of their fields in such a myriad of ways. And everyone's story is so unique and different. And I speak very candidly on the pod and in interviews that I've done over the years how I was really not supported or lifted by women throughout my career. Very rarely. In fact, the opposite. In fact, kicked. Kicked in the stomach, kicked in the head, kicked in every possible way. And I think that the impetus for starting this podcast was like, you know what? I actually am the opposite. And I actually like to celebrate and lift up the women in my life, especially the ones that I'm so impressed by and have these incredible stories. Because I think what I'm hearing a lot of now, especially since the pandemic, is how many women have started off as one thing or a few things in their lives and get to this point, whatever the age is, 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s, and going, what is my life? And what am I doing? And I've done this for so long. I've been in a tech company. I've been in corporate America, whatever. You know what? I love X and this is what I want to do now. And at what point is it too late to pivot and how? And I think as women, you know, and Sarah Foster said this once, that for some reason our culture has raised us to think that for women, there's only one or two spots in everything for us, right? And so there's this fierce like jealousy and competition very often in different fields. And it's like, oh, how did she get that book deal? Why aren't I have that big deal? How did she get into selling at Bergdorf's? Why aren't I set? And so I really wanted to start Climbing in Heels to have the conversations of how these incredible women that I know, and I think regardless, you have to celebrate people's success and hard work. And
yeah, I look at women like when I started this company, which it was so funny. I just realized I started it in 2005 and I always thought it was
really
like 2006 or 7, like so long ago.
So but you're almost like, 20 years though. We have to like next year we got to do a thing, Melinda.
I got to do a thing. So like for the last year I've been like, yeah, we've been, when I'm in interview, like 17 years. And I'm like, I should really check on that. Because when I started, it was such a, I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. I was like, I was sort of giggling when I went in to get my business license. I was like, this is funny.
Well, okay. So I want to talk about like, that.
This is hilarious.
Because, hold up. Because we need to address the story. Because I need to share that I have become very close with Miss Melinda of Melinda Maria Jewelry, which most of you probably know and love already, but if you don't, you will. But over the last, I would say year mostly, but like, I feel like it's been 10 because I feel like I know everything about you, but I heard about little tidbits of your story and how you came to be from someone in the industry. And I said, I speak to her twice a day, 7 days a week. How do I not know the insanity of this story? And so I...
It seems like 40 lifetimes ago.
Right, but it was. But here's the thing. I think it's incredibly important to share because it is so unique. And, you know, I would say that of all the women that I've had on the pod, there are definitely common threads, right? There's a lot of women that were raised by single moms, single working moms, some that were raised with barely anything, who learned what work was at a very young age, survival skills, and you know, women that have grown up all over the country. But ambition, obviously, is the common thread, of course. But there is no story that is exactly like yours or even close. So, and you know, all different levels of education. Some have gone on through all the way, plus, plus, plus. Some have barely graduated high school. Uh-huh. But your story, I want to first go back. Where did you grow up, A? And B, how did you get out?
I grew up in Spokane, Washington. Okay. I mean, it was honestly like, the most loving, like we kicked the can every night. And like, I lived right next to all my best friends within like blocks away from each other. It was very idyllic in that way. But there, I always felt like there was something and we didn't.
And how many siblings? How many siblings?
I have two sisters who are my besties. Shout out to Sarah Hamilton and Ashley, both entrepreneurs, amazing women. And my brother, Jeff. And it was very idyllic in that way, but I was such an artist. I always had this intuition that like, I didn't fit here. There's something was, look at my dog.
Oh yeah, Goldie does the same thing.
So there was always this intuition that something was not right. Like I didn't fit in here, even though I fit in everywhere.
Yeah,
like I
was,
you know, with friends with every.
You had a void. There was something missing for you. This isn't my forever.
Wasn't my forever. And I didn't have, like, I think we went on one vacation growing up and we drove down to like Disneyland and stayed at this motel with an M, which my kids have no idea what that means. And a motel. Do you know what a motel is? They're like, what?
No, Levi Spiegel does not know what a motel is.
No, he definitely doesn't. Especially because I like share Brie and prosciutto with your son all the time. Anytime I put out prosciutto and Brie, he's like, Melinda, this is my favorite snack. I'm like, come on, Sky, let's have some Brie and prosciutto and truffled almonds.
At 1 a.m. 1 a.m.
Yeah, I was dying. I was like, of course you are Rachel's son. So great. And then my kids were like, huh? Anyhow, I had this like instinct in me that I guess I listened to. I always made jewelry. So I was super artistic. I always made jewelry. It was what I spent like my birthday money on, my babysitting money on. There was this little store called Rings and Things. And I would go down there and just like how you were a stylist always, yep. I was always a jewelry designer. And like, I was obsessed with jewelry. My mom really didn't have any. Actually, she had one pair of ruby earrings that I lost. Poor thing. And I should actually replace those. That's actually a great
yes,
idea.
You should. Yes, you should. Yes.
But so that was like my outlet is this place, Rings and Things. And I would like live down there and I would always like make little things. And this is like,
and how old were you? How old were you at this age?
I think I started when I was maybe like 10. Mm-hmm. So like my obsession with that, like I remember for my prom, I saved up so much money to buy a pair of Miguel Assis. I don't know if you remember Miguel Assis, but it's all these gorgeous beaded. And he was like my, like, everything back right. then. It was like Ms. Miguel. You looked at designers and I looked at like jewelry designers. But I remember for my prom, I bought those first. And I remember thinking, I cannot believe I'm spending, I think it was like $120, which was crazy back then.
Yeah, of course.
I wish I still had that.
We had, for jewelry, we had like, our heroes were like, at that time, like Ylang Ylang, Roxana Sulin, like all the gold and the big gold, like,
Right.
And the hearts and the things.
Well, I was in, there was no internet and I just had one store and it was Nordstrom's and they were not carrying the Roxana Azulin.
Not in Spokane.
So I had just like, that was like my obsession. That was literally my obsession. So when I left, I remember like, it's funny. I told you, I like recently went to this executive program at Harvard.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to get into that. Girl, we're going to get into that.
Really go to college.
Right.
But I was asking my mom because I was so interested in it. And I was so, the buy-in was so great for me because now I have a business and it was interesting to me. And I asked my mom, I was like, what kind of student was I? I don't remember because I was not interested in going to college.
Right.
And she was like, you were really good at what you wanted to learn. And that was it. Same. And like the other things you were like, I have no time for this. Same. Like there's zero time in my life for this. Because I was always busy making stuff. I was making crowns out of sticks or flowers. Or I was constantly putting on makeup and constantly trying different makeup looks. And so I was like, I just got to get out of here. I was like, I don't know where I got to go. And my parents were like, well, if you're not going to, I mean, my best bet was going to a junior college. I'm like, I'm not going to a junior college right now. And so I just looked up in the Yellow Pages and I was like, I got to go to New York City.
Yellow Pages.
And they were like, you've never been to New York City. I'm like, I know. That's exactly why I got to go. And they're like, well, how are you getting there? I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to figure it out. And so I don't even remember like even the term nanny. Like there wasn't even, I mean, in my neighborhood, like nobody had even a housekeeper, nobody had a nanny, like nothing like that.
Right.
You babysat yourself.
Right.
Like, by the time you could like sit up. Right.
Which is so wild because we won't leave our kids alone for 13 seconds.
What's that?
We won't leave our kids alone for 13 seconds. So.
Oh, I know. I know. Now I do because my oldest son is very, well, you know, Max, he's like a man.
Totally.
So he's fine. So I looked up in the Yellow Pages of nanny agency in Montana. And I remember calling them being like, hi, I'm a senior in high school and I need to get to New York City and be a nanny. And they're like, okay, great. And so signed up. They called me a couple of weeks later. They're like, we placed you with a family and it's right in the city on Park Avenue. I didn't even know what that was. I didn't know what Park Avenue was, Rachel. I was like, okay, great. It's like Park and 88th.
Nice. Nice address.
Yeah, it was a great address. I love when people are like, oh, you lived in New York. I was like, yeah. They're like, whereabouts? I'm like, oh, I lived at Park and 88th in the kitchen, literally off the kitchen in a closet. I was thrilled. So get the call. So I meet the family, whatever. And then the first day, this woman was like, Letty Aronson. And she's like, my brother's going to come over. And you're going to sort of help nanny, you know, like babysit.
Right. Cause the guy can't watch the kids alone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're getting dangerous waters.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair.
She was like, okay. So I opened the door and literally the most famous person I've ever seen, which like, God bless him. Cause he's a talent and he's an American treasure, is Alfonso Rivero. He was like doing a Michael Jackson, like imitation tour. And it was like very exciting in Spokane. It was very exciting. So that was the most famous person I've ever seen. Oh, and Richard Simmons. I tried to sell him. I was selling chocolate bars for our church. And Richard Simmons passed by me. He's like, sweetie, you know I do not eat that stuff. But here's $100. So shout out to Richard Simmons for helping me out. So I opened the door and it's Woody Allen. And I like kind of knew who he was. And he was wearing the full fisherman's hat and the glasses and everything. He's like, hi, I'm Woody. Would you like to play McDonald's Play-Doh Playland with me and my son, Satchel? His name was Satchel at the time. I think it's now Ronan. And I was like, sure. So I was like, this is wild. So then I was like exposed to all this stuff. Like we went on the set of Bullets Over Broadway. And I was just like, my head was like spinning and the culture and the lights and everything. I was like, it was literally like oxygen.
Yeah, of course.
I can't get enough of this. I was paid $175 a week. A week. Right. And I thought I was like living fat. I mean, I was.
Babe, I was doing $75 a day, 3 days a week.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you loved it. Well, wasn't my love. But
you were just living your life. You were just.
I was like, oh my God. And I remember downstairs they had an account. And I'd never heard of that. They had an account at like the little, you know, like fruit market, grocery sort of like little stand.
Yep.
They were like, you can just get anything you wanted. And I gained so much weight because I was eating these sugar-free Häagen-Dazs bars that were probably 700 calories each. And I think I gained like my freshman 20 just from this stand. They probably, now that I look at it, they probably looked at that bill and was like, what is this girl eating? She is like, I was like a pig in shit. Like when I went to the grocery store with my mom growing up, like I would always beg to go. Like I'd be lucky if I got like a box of graham crackers. So this was like, I was a pig in shit in New York, like $175 a week and living in a closet by the kitchen in Park Avenue. It was
with an account at a deli, like grocery store where you're going to like get anything you want. Like that's wild.
So anyhow, so then, you know, I had a time there and I was like, I really did want us to keep living there, but I was like, I don't want to be a nanny. And I didn't want to, I like couldn't afford to live in New York. Like I was like, okay, how can I go?
Who can?
Could not have afforded it. So I came home. I was sort of deflated and I was like, okay, mom and dad, I'm going to go to, and all the time I was making jewelry.
Right.
And I would just give it to people. And
great, Mel. Great.
Then I was like,
wait, entrepreneur.
And then I was like, oh no, I was nothing. I didn't know what the hell I was doing until maybe like 7 years ago. So then I went to, then I came home and I was like, okay, how can I make a living? I think I went to beauty school. So I remember my dad got me, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to beauty school. And that's what I'm going to do. Great. I'm going to be at a beauty school. And so I remember my dad saved up like $500 for the beauty school kit. It was at a community college. Mm-hmm. And I quickly realized that I wanted to be in the chair rather than behind the chair.
Right.
So I was like, this is not going to work. I want to be in the chair. and so I had like worked at a restaurant and my dad, literally my dad like never shut up about the $500 he wasted like for maybe 7 years because I quit. So then I saved a little bit of money and I decided, I was like, I'm going to go to Los Angeles. My parents again were like, my poor parents, honestly, like they were
bless
so
them stupid. Though, that they just were like, they were like okay, go. I mean,
not a lot of guidance there. Not a lot of guidance. Like to be quite frank, like I could have been sold off into like some sort of awful human being in like Saudi Arabia when I went to New York, but like, it's cool. They didn't check where I was going. There's no checking references. There's no phone call. I like came home at Christmas. I was like, oh yeah, I'm nannying for Woody Allen. Like, yeah, isn't he dating his niece? I'm like, yeah, he is. Or whatever, his stepdaughter. Not a lot of guidance there.
I'm dead.
I went down to LA and I'm driving down and the car breaks down. I'm like, okay, I think the story changes a little bit. It's like anywhere between $15 and like $2,000.
Okay.
And I got to LA and I like stayed in a youth hostel and I was like, oh fuck, this is not sustainable for me.
How old were you then?
Like, I think I was like 23.
Okay. So you're a grown up. Okay. This is like, you have to start life now. Like for real.
Yeah. Although I wasn't thinking like that. You're thinking like that. I was like, whatever.
You're like, thinking. I've been starting my life since I was 15. Cool.
Like literally. So then I called this guy. I'm like, shit, I don't know anybody down here. And I remember I met this guy who's just this wonderful, wonderful human being. And but haven't kept in touch with him since.
Oh my God.
I should call him. I called him and I knew he was in Spokane when I met him and he was from here. And he's so sweet. He's like, well, I was like, I'm really in a bind. Like I drove down here and I don't know where to stay. I don't have any money. I don't have a college degree or a job. And he's like, okay, sweetie. He's like, okay, why don't you, let me call my mom and let me see if she has something for you. And so I remember I was at a payphone in Venice and she called me back on the payphone and she was like, Sweetie, why don't you come stay with
us? Do that.
What?
I forgot you can call people back at payphones.
Yes, yes. So she calls, she's like, come drive to me and you know, we'll figure out what's happening with you. She was really sweet. And so I drive and like driving in these gorgeous neighborhoods and it was in Palos Verdes. And all of a sudden these giant gates open and it's on the water. And this woman comes out in this full linen outfit. And she's like, Melinda. And I'm like, I'm home. I'm like, yes, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is it. I didn't know what it was, but this is it.
I feel safe. Everything's beautiful.
Safe.
Oh my God.
I feel cozy. This is my people.
Oh my God.
So literally I lived with her and like I lived with them. I can't remember how long it was, maybe like 6 months or 7 months. And I worked for them. I like helped them around the house. Right. I did errands for them. Their parents were there.
Right.
And they were older and I helped with them. And then I got a job, but still I was always literally making jewelry. So then I got a job at MTV and I like hopped around and then I was a makeup artist and I got a job at MTV for a guy that, I mean, I had no resume. He clearly like just wanted to hook up with me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean.
I had no resume and I was a terrible assistant. Awful. And so, but I like then went around and did like PA stuff. And then I started doing makeup at different makeup counters. So I would like travel. I was like at Nordstrom's.
Yeah. Or yeah.
I would travel and be like the makeup. And then I was making jewelry. So then I sort of like got on my feet a little bit and I was realizing, I was like, okay, I really want to be a jewelry designer. Like, this is what I want to do, but I didn't really know how to do it. So I started going to Starbucks. This is, I think, where you heard the story. I started going to Starbucks. I'm like, where do people like go? Where can I like get people's attention? I'm like, Starbucks was like the place. And Starbucks was like, you had money if you were going to Starbucks and getting a lot.
Right.
Like that was indulgent for me.
Yeah.
And so I would sit underneath where people got their drinks at Starbucks and I would make jewelry like where they, I mean, you know, think about that turn. You're like every minute someone's passing by you. So, I mean, I think it was pretty genius myself.
Yes.
And so I would be selling.
It's a very high traffic area.
Very high traffic and very low rent. For me, really low rent.
Yes.
So I would literally be selling my jewelry at Starbucks. I would go to Santa Monica one. I would go to the Robertson one. I would go to the Beverly Hills one. Robertson one, that's where I got Lisa Klein, my first store. Do you remember Lisa Klein?
Yeah, of course.
She was the store.
Of course.
And so, I mean, there were days where I was like, oh my God, I just sold like $1,000. Like what?
That's insane. That is insane. And I trust me, I know that Starbucks because I was living at Curve and V&A, which were next
door. That's right. We were just ships passing in the night there.
We really were.
Oh my God. But we were there for each other.
But where does the game show come in? Because we cannot not talk about that.
I still had a million jobs. I still was like, I didn't like park it at Starbucks full time. I still had a bunch of like little freelance jobs. And really not making barely any money, like barely paying my rent. And then I was
which is so terrifying though. Like, were you ever just like, I'm scared? Were you ever like, because you're such like a positive person, but like, and obviously as you sit here successful today, like, you know, I don't want to play down the fear of what that is because
No, all I knew was I wanted to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. Like that was my personality. It wasn't like I wasn't a big planner. I had no hopes and dreams to be a big jewelry designer. I literally just wanted to like pay my bills and live in a tiny apartment and, you know, be able to do what I love and to go to, like, I remember when I went to, I could never afford to go to Whole Foods at the time and get the salad bar because it was too expensive.
Yep.
I remember I felt like I really had made it when I was able to go to the salad bar at Whole Foods. And I was like, I don't even have to like weigh this.
Yep.
The truth. Like, I remember like, this is amazing. This is amazing. So I didn't have those like, everyone's like, oh, what were your goals? I'm like, I didn't have one. And I really-
You were like, I'm surviving. I want to stay here and I want to be able to live my life here.
Exactly.
Right? That's what like, that was the goal.
I wanted to not move back to Spokane, even though I love it now and yeah. I go back every year and it's the best place on earth to raise kids. But I just knew it wasn't for me.
Yeah. I want to talk about that for 1 minute because I think as we mentioned at the beginning of this, sort of like success is success, whether you're born into it, whether you're born privileged, whether you're not. But I want to just talk about that for a second because, well, what is success? But also like just for me listening to your story, right? Like I did grow up in without having to think about these things. And I don't want to underplay that because I think it is such a part of who you are still, because I know you now and I know the difference and I know how you work and I know how you hustle. And I'm not saying that someone who grew up in privilege doesn't work as hard, but it's different because the measure of that, it's also the fear, right? So the one thing I always say is a point of differentiation. Yours in your mind was always like, if I don't make it here and I don't make enough money to pay my rent, I'm going back to Spokane. Right? Like yes, I'm going back to live with my parents.
There was no backup. There was no, hey mom. I remember one time I called my dad and I was bawling and I was in my car and I remember so vividly, I was raining and my car was like, it needed to be fixed and I didn't have money for rent.
Right.
And I was like, I have to borrow money from you. And my dad took it really seriously and I took it really seriously.
Right.
And maybe that's, you know, why I respected it so much.
Sure.
But I mean, it was survival. It was like my option was to go back to Spokane and I just wasn't happy. I wouldn't be happy doing that.
So sure.
For me, that was my drive is like, I just loved it here. Like even though I was struggling and it was so fucking hard and it was so lonely, especially because I moved here without like
anyone.
I didn't go to college here and I didn't have I didn't have any connections to anything. I just moved and knew nobody, but I just knew like I wanted to be around like excitement and I loved the weather and it was so happy. But with all the hard times I had such wonderful memories of the struggle.
Totally.
Like, struggle was every little win I had, like I was able to get the salad bar and I didn't have to worry about paying for it at Whole Foods. Like that was such a win for me. Or when I
which is beautiful. That is so beautiful.
I shared a bedroom with the girl I had to share a bedroom with because when I started my company, I had no money. And I was like, my friends were in a nice condo with like a nice car. And I was sharing a crappy bedroom in Santa Monica because I had to pare back in order to start my company.
Yep.
But like the first time a celebrity wore something or whatever, like even though like I was so broke and I was so lonely, I was still, the things that made me happy were making jewelry, being in California in the sun and like seeing people walking down Rodeo or not Rodeo.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like Robertson. Yeah. Like seeing in stores or just walking into stores where I saw fashion that I was like, this garment is so beautiful. Like I couldn't afford it, but I still looked at that as like a beacon of something.
Yeah.
Amazing. But I decided I was like, okay, well maybe I could try to start this, but I don't have any money. And I didn't know, I wasn't like educated. I didn't know that I could go
raise money. You didn't know you could like go around and ask people to help fund your business.
There was nobody. So I was like, okay, I was watching Jeopardy and I was like, okay, I can't go on this show because I don't know anything on this show. I know like two questions and they're in the pop culture section. And so I was like, okay. I turned it to the next channel and I was like, oh, here's Hollywood Squares. This idiot just said X and O and he won more than the guy on Jeopardy. I'm going on that show. So I looked it up again, my yellow pages, got my yellow pages out. And I was like, okay, it's on ABC. And I called them. I'm like, oh, hey, how can I get on Hollywood Squares? And they told me how to get on and I went on. And you do this mock game show and you take a test. And I was shocked that like 3/4 of the room didn't pass the Hollywood Squares test. And so that took all those people out. And then you do a mock game show and I'm fairly charismatic. And so
They called
me like 2 weeks later and they're like, okay, can you be down here? Whatever. And I remember I was like, I had like a babysitting job like lined up for that weekend. And that would have brought me a lot of money. And I really had to decide, like, okay, am I going to babysit or am I going to go do this? And I called the person I was babysitting. I'm like, hey, I know this is last minute. And tell me if you can't find anybody, then I'm going to babysit just like I said I would. But I got called to be on this game show and I know I'm going to win a car and a lot of money. And they were like, okay.
Okay, crazy.
I'm not going to be watching my kids anymore. Goodbye. And I swear to God, I like secreted the shit out of that game show. And I won a car. I won like 60 grand worth of cash and prizes. I won like a
That is the sickest thing.
All this stuff. And I was like, I remember putting like $30,000 in my bank account. I was like, I'm so rich. This is crazy amount of money. And then I heard that I had to pay taxes on it. I was like, what's that? So I had to sell my Mazda Miata, although I took it for a spin a few weeks.
Your Mazda Miata.
I sold that and paid my taxes. And then that sort of like was my seed money. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to go on every game show in Los Angeles. And so then I went on, one of my friends, this girl that I was friends with in New York, she was my other like nanny friend.
Right.
She's from Austria. And she's like, I'm coming to LA and I really want to visit you. I'm like, okay, come stay with me and the person I'm staying with in our room. Great. And she's like, I really want to go on The Price is Right. And I'm like, oh, me too. But I'm like, I'm going to win. So I went on there and won on there. And it was Bob Barker. And I won like a $700 or $900 barbecue or $1,900 barbecue or something. Because I got it right on. So I got to reach in his pocket. So that was creepy. The $500 reach around pocket grab. But I was like, it's fine. It's $500. I'll take it. I'm taking it.
So then I am dead.
I went on. It's actually cut to years later. My publicist is like, hey, do you want to go on Hollywood Squares? Or do you want to go on Price is Right as a Barker's Beauty to give away a collection of your jewelry as like one of the things they bid on? And I'm like, oh my God, this is the best full circle moment. It was great. But that was Drew Carey. And then that was Drew Carey. He was like, oh, I heard you were on here before. I'm like, yeah, that's how I started my company.
I legitimately cannot believe this. So this was 2005 now. Okay.
Okay. So no. Hold on. So then, not yet. Because I hadn't like started my LLC. Yet.
Okay.
Aren't timelines like... I got to do like a lifeline one day.
Babe, my whole life's a blur. Like,
right? But don't you feel like you're like, wait, it was 2005. No, it was 2017. Okay. Thank God.
It's only when I do things like this and people interview me, I'm like, right. Yeah. Oh, so yeah, wait, that was that? Right.
Or 10 years ago. Yes. Not sure which. So then I was like, okay. So I got onto this, like, I guess, casting call of this casting director. And she would always call me and be like, hey, do you want to be on this reality show? And I was like, no, I don't want to do reality. Do you want to be on this show? Reality. It was all reality. I was like, I have no interest in being on a reality show. And so then they were like, okay, do you want to come and be on this dodgeball game show on the game show network? And I was like, all right, brass tacks, lady, how much can I win? I was like, I don't care about anything. I don't care about dodgeball. I just care about some winnings. And she's like, you could win like, I don't know. It was like 25 grand or something. I'm like, I'll be there. I'm right there.
Did you win?
No. So then I went on that, and that's where I met my husband. Literally where I met my husband.
Get out.
So game shows, I have a very soft
Babe, do you still watch them? You must be, like, obsessive.
No, but I really want to go on Family Feud with my sisters. I'm like, we have to go on, and my nieces. So I.
You know that I've been a question on Jeopardy a few times. And
of course you have. You're a legend.
No, but like I found that so shocking because I've never played any of those.
Take a photo of that and frame it and put it in your office because that's legendary. That's epic. That's when you know you have really hit them all.
Oh my God. I can't. Wait, Melinda.
That's one of the questions I could have answered.
This is the sickest. This is one of the greatest stories I've ever heard. No, but truthfully, because...
It's funny. When I look back and think about all the things that happened, it was just crazy. So then my husband's like, you're all over the place. He's my Jewish husband that was like, let's get the shit together. Because then I was just like an artist doing a million things. And he was like, it was so funny. We looked at when I started my company. So we met in September And he was like, you need to really get your shit together and do one thing and quit everything else. And I was like, and he's like, and then pare back all your expenses. And I'm like, okay, I want to be a jewelry designer. And he was like, all right, that's what you're going to do. I'm like, I am. He was like, yes. I mean, I knew I wanted to do that.
Yeah, of course, but it didn't seem real.
I had no mentors. Right. I had nobody in the fashion industry I knew. I had nobody that I knew that was really sort of in the business world or started a company. I didn't know one person except for, you know, my husband.
But also, so, I think I want to pause on that for a second, because I think as I'm listening to you and you know, listen, I've spoken, I've had so many amazing women on here. And like, the thing is with you is that it sounds to me that you've basically been, it's almost like you were going at such a lightning speed because you were in such like survivor mode. You're like, I need more money for this. Okay, I got to do this. Okay, I got to get off the couch. I want to be able to get food. I have to be able to like, and I think that's the thing. And I think when you're in that like survivor mode and you don't even realize it because the ramification, like the alternative was leaving LA. So I think for you, your your focus, your like light at the end of the tunnel was like, I'm not leaving LA. So whatever it takes for me to stay here, I'm doing the next game show. I'm meeting the next person. I'm like, and I think beyond you going, what is my number one focus of what I love the most and whatever, because at that point you're like, I need to do what I need to do to get to X. And so I think Art was probably the first person that was like, shh.
Yes.
Sit down. Exactly. Take a breath. And like, what do you want to do with your life? Because right now, you're not starving today.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
So like, let's now discuss what you actually are going to do, and that's what you're going to focus on. And I think that's the thing. It's sort of like, you've been living at this frenetic survival pace for what, 15 years, 10 years at this point, right?
Yeah. I mean, we met when I was almost 30. I was 29.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so wild. That's my company, good 15 years.
September of 2004, I guess. And I started my company. I just saw the LLC, like the business paper. I just stumbled on it. Like, yesterday, cleaning out this drawer. And it was, when was it? So October, no, we met September. So it was like January is when I went and got my business license. It was like 2 months later or something. Wild. So then I just like, I was like, okay, like, let me go through my expenses and see what I can pare down. I sold a car that I had that wasn't even that nice. I think I got like $6,000-$7,000 for it. And I think I got another car where I had to put a down payment for $1,500 and it was like a total shit car. Mm-hmm. And then that was like really some humble pie. My little sister's friend, my little sister is 10 years younger than I am. She was like, I'm going to move to LA. And she was going to nursing school or had just become a nurse or something. And I'm like, great. Can you share a bedroom with me? And she was like, she was more like, can I share the apartment with you? I'm like, do you want to share a bedroom? So I moved out of my room that I was sharing with another couple girls. And I had to share a bedroom. And I didn't do anything. I didn't go at any clubs. I never was really interested in that anyhow. I was like totally a homebody and more of like a health person.
But how did you decide like what kind of jewelry? Because obviously there's a lot of jewelers. There's a lot of jewelry in the world. But your brand, I find to be very unique. I think it's very unique.
Well, I couldn't afford to start a fine jewelry company.
Well, Well, talk about that because it's very expensive to do that, to start a business.
Very expensive. No, mine was more like, how do I love the look of diamonds. They're so sparkly. I don't wear, like when I wear my big tennis necklaces that are diamonds, you know, or simulate diamonds, like I wear it because I feel sparkly in it.
Sure.
Like I don't wear it because I'm like, I want to show somebody how much money they think they have. Like,
right.
When I look at people that have just like, you know, so flashy with things and like just labels over everything.
Right.
Like, I need, like, that to me is like an insecurity a little bit, maybe.
Of course.
I'm like, I wanted to wear something that I was like, I don't get to buy that. And I probably, and I mean, at that point I was like, I never will.
Right.
And so I wanted to wear something that looked like a diamond necklace, but I couldn't afford it.
Right.
And so that's really where it came from. It came from like a need of like, that's always what my designs are, like a need of pretty much what I want to wear.
Sure.
But for me, it was just like, how do I get that look? Because I want it too. It's not fair that like, I can't have a diamond necklace or something that looks like it.
Yeah.
So, and I still feel like that. I still feel like I want to design, you know, for the working woman that like self-purchases that like is never going to be able to have that discretionary income to buy a diamond tennis necklace, but really wants one.
Yeah. But so, the irony of Melinda Maria is that, you know, and I know that we're seeing the biggest celebrities in the world who can buy the real thing 10 times over and are opting to wear Melinda Maria.
Yeah, I know. That's the fun part. I think when I think about celebrities, like, you know, I really love when I see women. My most favorite thing is when I see women on the street
in the wild.
You probably get that. That's like so fun.
It's
and they're
the
wearing pieces and they're like, your pieces make me feel so good. That's my most favorite part.
Well, because it's nobody that you asked to buy it. It's nobody you know.
Yeah.
It's not a favor. They opted with the 2,000 jewelry brands out there to wear yours and to buy yours.
Literally 2,000 or 3,000.
Yes.
But about the celebrity, it's not so much about celebrity obsessed. It's more like, oh, well, I know Jennifer Lopez can borrow Mia Lane diamonds and she's wearing my diamond hoops instead.
Yeah.
Or when somebody wears like a $25,000 gown and
Taylor Swift.
Yeah. And then they're wearing a $68 pair of earrings with that $25,000 gown on the red carpet. Like that's really fun. So I feel like I was, you know, maybe one of the first to sort of infiltrate maybe the stylist world of like people really putting the not real diamonds on people on the red carpet. And, you know, now there's a lot of brands, but like, that part is really fun because I know they can pull anything.
Sure. I mean, as you sit here today, do you still like, are you aware of like, you know, because we talk about it, right? Like we're talking about it now, but like, I feel like you're the same person as the person that like left with nothing and left Spokane to just like do the dream because as we sit here and you and I talk about this a lot, you know, the coddled generation that we are now trying to employ have a very different work ethic in large part. There are still superstars. Don't get me wrong. There are still superstars. But I guess what I'm saying is like, as you sit here today, living your life, because I do consider you still probably one of my most rational friends. And like you still like, it's funny because we talk about this all the time when we're talking about planning an event or whatever, you're like, oh, I'm not using that person. That person wanted to charge me some insane amount of money. You're still very scrappy in your mind. And I think that's an entrepreneurial thing. But when I listen to your story, like, because I won't overpay for things, especially like, you know, I know too much, right? I know too much. But when I listen to you, I'm sort of like, well, it's also because this is how she built herself, right? Like you are not going to get taken advantage of. You're not going to spend stupid money, no matter how much money you have, right?
Yeah.
Because
100%.
Now you have this tremendously successful company. But I want to talk about that because I want to talk about for a second, like what, because you are such a positive person and I'm not as positive as you are. I consider myself to be a bit. Roger says negative. Sometimes I say realist. I like to predict things before it happens because I like to.
I think you like to think things through.
I do. I do.
Thoughtful. I think you like to think things through. You're very thorough about that. Or I'm a little bit more like, oh, it's going to be fine.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so I think there's something to that. And I think as an entrepreneur, I think that skill is very valuable, because I think that it's very scary, as you know, and you know, I always like to say the highs are the highest and the lows are the lowest and the scariest and all the things.
Oh my God. I have been on my knees crying several times, bawling.
Tell me about that. So
quit this business. This is, what am I doing?
Right. And so I want to talk about that.
Not the last like 4 years, but before that, all the other years. Yes. Yeah.
All the other years. Yeah. And how did you come out of that? Because it is terrifying. And I think as an entrepreneur, I think the thing that I would always say, and tell me if you agree, it stops at you. There isn't a person above you to go, "Wah, this isn't working. How do I fix it? Help me get out of this." You have to figure it out, right?
Yeah.
So how do you keep going in those moments? And like, what scares you the most? And what is the most exciting for you to come?
Interesting. Okay. What keeps me going in the times that are really hard is basically, it's such a simple answer for me. Now it's different because I have children, because that's what keeps me going. I realize the influence I've had on them, seeing my work ethic and seeing work hard is something. They also see the things that that don't work out. I think it's just as important to show your kids like the things that you've worked at that don't work out. And you're like, did not work out.
Yep.
This is a bummer. This is a flop or whatever. Like those are really important lessons to learn, to teach your kid, but even maybe more so than the successes. But so now what keeps me going is my children. But the bigger picture, if I didn't have the kids, which is such a, okay, that's a boring answer. But honestly, and this is what I think that is so important to figure out for our kids, is what are you dying passionately to wake up and do every day.
Right.
So what has kept me going through all the years that were so tough, and trust me, like my God, the first 10 years were absolutely brutal. Like brutal, and kicked in the stomach and the teeth and the tits and the ego and like just the ego part of it. Like if you actually, I do want to talk about ego in a second, but my burning passion and love for jewelry is what kept me going. That and like not wanting to move because I didn't have a backup, because I loved living here. And I always felt like so grateful that I was found my way here. But yeah, I think it's like, I just love what I do. I love the jewelry part of it. Like I never, ever, ever would have made it this far had I not loved the daily part of what I do. So that's for you too. Like
100%.
I remember when I watched your show, which is like the best, the absolute best. And that was so inspirational for me, Rachel. Like, I don't even know if I've ever told you, like just watching you and what you did was so inspiring to me. Honestly, like it's you're such a real person that it's just that, you know how you meet somebody and they're like so nice and so real, like the demystified, like stardom sort of like ways, or like, you know, like it's not there anymore, but like, you're such a legend and like, so sweet. Yeah. You're so inspirational to me. Actually.
Nothing makes me happier, because as we've talked about, like that show was so hard for me. It was so hard for me because I had 800 real like day jobs and night jobs. Right. And so doing this show was an additional full-time job, and it was grueling, and I had a lot to protect and a lot to sort of do in that show. But at the end of the day, in retrospect, the impact it had on so many people that I know and don't know, nothing could make me happier, truthfully. But that's the thing. And I have found that the largest impact it had is on people exactly like you, who were in a small town or wherever they came from, and were like, "Hey, shit, I can do this. No. Right. I'm doing that."
I looked at it like, "Oh my God, what is she doing? That's so cool. I didn't even know that existed. That's amazing." And then just like all the, you know, but again, like going back to like, it seeped through the television how much you loved styling.
Genuinely.
You free.
Anything for free.
You kind of were probably for many years.
A lot of it was.
I think that's what sets apart somebody that has the perseverance to make it over those years. I mean, it took me many years to be profitable. Many, 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 many years to be profitable. And the only thing that really kept me going was, well, two things. A was not wanting that. I had no other backup.
Right. A little bit of fear. Fear, honestly.
Fear and backup. And actually, I was very stubborn and I just didn't want to do it. Like I said before, like I had no interest of doing anything that I didn't want to do.
But that's amazing.
And then just my love of jewelry, my love of the designing it and seeing it and then seeing how it makes people feel when they wear it. And, you know, having those little first little shows in my apartment where I would invite all the Starbucks gals over and, you know, having them like fawn all over it and then talk to me about it. Like, I was like, this is, if I could just make a living and live in an apartment for the rest of my life, like,
this is good.
I'm good.
I'm good. This is great.
No, but now I have loftier goals.
Well,
now, but I didn't have exposure to like the bigger world of business and things like that. So now I see I have way more exposure to what's possible. I mean, when you had touched on earlier about like females, like not like looking at something and being like, I want that. Or, you know, why does she have that or whatever?
Sure.
I always look at those things like I'm giving Kendra Scott, who I guess could quite possibly be a competitor of mine, which she is, but I always looked at her like, oh my God, she's amazing. And she does exactly what I do. We're in the same category. And I was like, her business is so amazing. And she started where I did. And her business is so, I mean, she's multi-billion dollar company.
But
she's
that's smart. Incredible. That's so smart.
Like, when you look at women and are like, oh, I want that. So I do that all the time. I'm like, oh my God, you had a beach house? I want that too.
Right.
But it's not, I don't want you to have that. It's like, I am so excited for you to have this beach house because I'm going to fucking be here every day until I get one. And then I'm going to have you over to mine.
Yes.
But it's the, I want that too is okay. That's okay to feel that. But it's the, I don't want you to have that. It's the problem.
So you know what that is? And it's the first lesson I taught my kids as soon as they were old enough to speak. The difference between envy and jealousy. And those are, that is the most important lesson I think we can teach A, ourselves, but B, our children, because jealousy is the most evil emotion, hands down. It makes you do crazy things. It makes you mean. It makes you vindictive. And envy is something where you say, wow, you're fucking badass. Shit. I want that. I'm going to figure out how to get there. I want to be where you are.
Yes.
You
and know? Also, I'm also excited for you because you are.
Yes, you earned this.
So like somebody like a Kendra Scott was like a beacon for me and she still is. She's like phenomenal. Yep. And you could quite literally say she's my competitor, but I still, it doesn't matter to me because I look at her and I'm like, she is doing rad shit in my category. Yep. And she, for me, was like this trailblazer. And so anytime I'd be like, oh, should I be doing fine jewelry? I'm like, what am I doing? I'm like, oh, I just saw Kendra Scott on the, she's number 14 on the Forbes most self-made richest women in the world. I think I'm good. So like, she was always that person for me that, you know, that sort of like that example. So,
but I think that's an entrepreneurial lesson, to be honest, because I had someone on the pod actually yesterday who was very interesting, who said, who was the exact same way as you are, which is so positive in that, okay, well, because that person sold her company for $1 billion, that only helps me because now I know this category is working and it is filling a white space and it is doing all those things. And I think that's such a lesson for me on climbing in heels in general for my listeners to really understand that when you're starting a business, yes, you don't have to be the only one doing this. Look around you, see what's working, see what's not working. Have your own mark, have your own stamp, your own message, your own niche, whatever it is. But like, if someone's winning at something in a space that's similar, like that's huge. That does not mean you can't. Yes.
As a beacon of where to go.
Yes.
And it's possible.
It is.
Because I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know very many fashion jewelry designers. I really didn't, especially none with the pieces that I was doing when I started.
No.
So, you know, you need those beacons of people in success.
But I also think you're being humble. And I do want to shout out to that Melinda, not only works so hard, like still, she works really hard. She goes to the office. She works really hard. She has three incredible boys who are at tough ages. I mean, 10, 13, and 14, literally like the 15, like literally the closest in age that siblings could be.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're in, almost 12 and 13.
They're raging. Their hormones are raging at our house. Hormones are raging, and it is a crazy place here. But we have fun. We laugh so hard.
We laugh so hard.
Yeah, we laugh so hard. One thing I love about my kids, they all have insane senses of humor.
They do.
And so we die laughing. It's great.
But when I first met your son, Levi, who is one of Sky's best friends, one of the things that I found, I fell in love with him because it was when they first became friends and I walked upstairs and they were hanging out in the playroom and they were, I say playroom, but I guess it's now a rec room because they're tweens.
Yeah.
But they, and they were sitting there just listening to music, talking, and Levi was on the phone with someone and he's like, yeah, he's like, she sounds a lot like my mom. And, you know, it reminds me a lot of my mom. They're both really pretty and they work really hard and have great businesses. And like,
what about you, I thought
about me, but yes, comparing me to you. And I called you because I was like, that was one of the best ever. because it means you're doing something right. He's like, my mom is really beautiful, but nice and works really hard and has a business. And like, so there was this description of his mom that was so accurate, but also like, he was proud. It wasn't like, oh, my mom works, so I don't get to see her. It wasn't like that. It was like, my mom has her shit together, you know?
I'm real with my kids. I'm like, this is my fucking job. Yep. And your job is to do well in school and be a good human being. Yep. That's period.
That's what I say to Sky.
You have all the privileges in the world. Yep. You don't have to worry about anything. Your bills are taken care of. Yep. You've got great teeth. I couldn't afford braces growing up. Like literally I got to have Invisalign when I was like 38.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is your job and do it well. And this is my job and period, end of story. And I'm not going to make it to every single game. I'm going to make it to what I can. And I'm not going to make it to every single thing. And like, it's just life. So I think my kids know that the world doesn't, like, they are my world, but the world doesn't revolve around them.
Right. Which is hard. Which is hard. I find that to be the hardest thing to straddle.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. I think maybe I'd be less like that with girls. I don't know. But like, we have a very,
I think you'd be tougher on your girl. I think you'd be harder on your girl.
Maybe I'd be tougher on your girl.
You would.
Sure.
You
would. But anyhow, my kids know, like, they're like, we work. This is what we do. Like, there's no, I'm going to leave work, you know, and sacrifice. I don't know. I actually, take that. I do leave work sometimes to be at their things, but like,
There's a line. They know.
I think it's important to maybe be late to pick them up every once in a while. When my friend's like, I feel so bad, I'm late picking them up. I'm like, why? Because they had to wait 5 minutes. Are you kidding me? Like, but yeah, wait. Like Levi called me the other day. He's like, where's somebody to pick me up? That he was about done with baseball. And I'm like, Magali will be there in like 25 minutes. And he's like, oh my God. I'm like, oh my God, what? I'm like, I have to sit with my friends at school for 25 minutes. So I literally did that to him. And he was like, starts laughing. He's like, oh my God, you're right. I'm like, okay, goodbye. I got to work now.
But see, so, Melinda, that's important. That's important. That's really important because honestly, I'm guilty of that because I was the kid left at school and I was the kid waiting.
Well, look how you turned out. You're a super hardworking woman. Like, hello, 1 + 2 = 3. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's okay to be left on the bus stop for a little bit.
It is, isn't it?
Okay. Can we please normalize that?
Oh my God, maybe.
It's actually good for them.
Wait, maybe we should. Maybe we need to talk about this. But you're also part of this. And I want to finish on this because I want to address this because I do a couple of things. One is YPO, which is Young President's Organization, which I grew up in this organization. It was this organization for entrepreneurs. There was requirements around it. I grew up because my parents were in it and still in it at 86 and 81.
I have membership at Bel Air.
Okay.
So I know all the requirements.
It is very hard to get into. And yeah. Melinda is a member. So I want to say this girl that did not go to college, that came from Spokane and all of these things, is a very active member at YPO, which is not easy to be in. And you are in a very tough, smart, successful group of people around the country and the world.
Around the world.
Around the world. So
every membership or every chapter has a different, like,
I
think our membership goal, our membership is like, I think for consumer products, you have to be doing 30 million a year.
That's a big deal, babe.
And 50 employees.
Thank you.
For our chapter.
Correct. So that is a big deal. I want to just say that.
5% women. So no, when I joined YPO, like, it was really funny. I was in the backyard. I was with Nora. Shout out to Nora and Brian Weinstein. And I had, you know, we had had like a sort of rocket ship success. I think it was maybe like back in 2018 or 19 or something. Maybe it was like 2019. And Brian was like, you should apply for YPO. And I'm like, oh, that's so funny. Like, cause I knew about YPO. And I was like, oh, that's something that I will never be able to get into. Like, it wasn't, again, no goals for that, nothing. And he's like, I bet you qualify. And I was like, I probably do. So when I went and applied, I was like, okay, I was like, I'm just going to be myself. Like, I am the least, I stick out like a sore thumb.
Same.
And I was just honest. I was like, look, I, you know, everyone's like, not everyone, but a lot of people are like, went to business school and then went to Harvard and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, hey, I got my seed money on game shows and I didn't graduate college. And I moved here with no money.
But they were probably obsessed with that.
They loved it. No, they loved it. It's the most special group of people. And it really has been a profound effect on mine and my family's life. It's amazing. But the funny part is like I said, like I had just joined this thing. I had gotten into this thing where I could do this executive program.
Well, wait. Okay. I'm getting to that because so this girl from Spokane, Washington, who is sitting here telling me that this, that, and the other thing, and she didn't know anything about business and blah, 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 blah. She was unavailable to do a whole bunch of things a couple weeks ago. And she's like, I'm studying. I'm like, are you going to grad school? Like, what's happening? She's like, I'm going to Harvard for this business school, for this program, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm really excited. I'm really nervous. And I was like, that is fucking badass. And I'm so impressed that you worked so hard to do it.
It was so hard.
And you went. And it's like a really big deal. And you did
it. It was amazing. I decided a while ago that I wanted to do things that scare me. I decided maybe like 6 months ago. I was like, I want to do things that really scare me. And, you know, there's been a few, anything that has opportunities that I can do. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm an okay public speaker, but like any time I have some sort of opportunity that's something that scares me, I'm like, that's going to be like, ooh, I'm going to do that. So there was this thing, this email that went in. They're like, you can apply for this program, this executive program at Harvard Business School through YPO. You have to be a member of YPO, an active member. And I was like, oh my God, that is so scary. And I've never studied in my life for anything. And I studied more in this time to prepare for the schooling that I had to go to when I went to Boston than I ever did in my entire life. The accumulation of studying that I did. But yeah, it felt really good. I mean, it definitely felt like,
accomplished. Like you did the thing that you thought you would never do.
Yeah. Well, it was another one of those moments where I was laughing to myself so hard. Like after I started my business and I had a business license, I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. And then when I had my first few employees, I'm like, this is funny. And then when I had my first office space, I was like, this is weird. And then when I got joined YPO or was able to qualify.
It's all the nevers.
Or the first time that I was in People magazine or the first time Celebrity Awards thing. Or when Julia Roberts called me to her hotel room with her stylist. We're like, hey, can you come style us for my whole tour of this next movie we're doing? And I'm like, this is hilarious. So all of those sort of like imposter syndrome moments, they just get maybe a little bit bigger, and then you're just a little bit more older to be able to handle them. But then you always get there and you're like, oh, this is what I thought was such a big deal.
Yeah.
Like this is what I was scared of.
Yeah.
Like this is what I thought people were better than me about. Yep. Like No, they're not. Nobody ever is. Like, yep. You gotta dispel those things that, like, you think these big curtains are held up and there's something magical behind it. And this is the only the people that can be here are. And you get there and you're like, really?
Uh-huh.
I'm fine here. Uh-huh. I fit in, or, you know, I should be sitting at this table. So yeah, I don't know. It's it's been quite a journey when I think, I mean, even just sitting here with you now, like, I was doing Pilates before this and I was telling my instructor, she's like, oh, what do you have going on today? I'm like, oh, I have to work. And then I got to do this podcast. She's like, oh, what podcast? I said, oh, Rachel Zoe. She's like, oh my God, you like casually dropped that. Like, are you serious? She goes, she's a legend. And I'm like,
aww.
And I was like, it's so funny, as I had my legs in my straps. And because I know you, and I so don't put people on pedestals, but I, like, you were so influential in my life, but I realize, I'm like, oh, that is amazing. This is incredible that I'm doing this with Rachel today. Like, this is a moment. I'm like, you're somebody that I watched your show that inspired me a million years ago when I was sitting in my shitty apartment that, like, was scary to live in, and watching your show and being like, oh, this is so cool. But I always looked at things of like, well, why not me? It's going to happen right to somebody. Well, why not me?
But see, I think that is what actually took you over the wall, yeah, ultimately, yeah, because I posted this thing very late last night. You know how you get served all these silly things on Instagram that you really never followed or never whatever, and all these, yeah, things show up, and I couldn't fall asleep. And all of a sudden I see George Clooney, who I love, and he said this thing. He was doing this interview and someone cut this clip, this thing that he said. And I said, God, that's so epically fucking true. He said, you learn nothing from success. You learn everything from failure and fear. He's like, success is easy. He's like, being successful is easy. You don't sit there and learn. You go, you just are like, how can I do this next? Yeah. How can I do this? You're not learning. When you do the thing that scares you and you fail, that's where you learn. Because if you don't, absolutely. And he gave this example. He's like, you could wake up at 65 and go, well, what if I tried all that? I wonder what would have happened. Or shit, I did that. It sucked. I failed. But guess what? It took me to the thing that ended up being the winning ticket for me.
Yeah.
And
I also
true.
Think there's one other element to that, or one other piece of that, is that I look back and I think, why did I come down here with no money and no friends and no education and no nothing? Mm-hmm. Why did I, you know, make jewelry and sit at that Starbucks and I mm-hmm. was rejected, mm-hmm. you know, quarters of the time, yep. or more than that, of people wanting to buy something, or people probably looked at me like, what the hell is she doing? This mm-hmm. girl's weird. Mm-hmm. Like, she's sitting making jewelry at Starbucks, like, go away. And I very well aware there's probably a million people like that, or made fun of me. Or if I, you know, walked into stores and be like, hi, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I walked in with jewelry to the stores I wanted to be in and be like, can you buy some of my jewelry? I'm a jewelry designer. Like, and I knew in my heart, like, I didn't really know what I was doing. Or when I called the editor of InStyle, because I found her phone number and I was like, hey, I'm a jewelry designer. And I, you know, all those things, I'm like, why did I do that? It's because I didn't have an ego.
Right. It's true.
Like,
you're right.
I had an ego and was so worried about, what are my friends going to think that I'm sharing a bedroom at 30 years old and I drive a really shitty car mm-hmm. and I'm still struggling in Los Angeles? Mm-hmm. Like, if I was so worried about what my friends thought or what people thought about me, or worried if I, you know, whatever, the failure part of it, like, I would never have done any of it.
You're 100% right.
The ego and that, like, need to present mm-hmm. Something that who you are is very scary to me for anybody mm-hmm. because I think it prevents people from doing, like, more exciting, risky things.
You're 1,000% right, because people will go down in flames to save face. And I
always
see it, and I'm watching it happen in my life right now.
Yep.
To somebody.
Or not, you know, take risks or pivot mm-hmm. or do a pivot and mm-hmm. be like, okay, this isn't working. Like, because they're so desperate to hang on to their, like, title. Like, I had a job as an assistant at, like, MTV. All my friends thought it was the coolest thing ever, mm-hmm. but I was like, but it wasn't great. So like to my friends in Spokane, me work getting moving to Los Angeles and getting a job at MTV was like, literally I had like gotten the golden ticket.
100%.
But I was like, but no, this isn't it. So had I needed to, to keep that like title for myself, I never would have started this.
And I think you're right. And I think I want to close on that because I think it's something we haven't really talked about on Climbing in Heels is ego and what role that plays in this process. And I think it's such an incredible point because I think also, I think just being a woman in general, we have an ego because we have, we live our lives like we have to prove ourselves 10 times over. So it's like, smoke and mirrors, right? It's like, no, we got this. Even if we don't got it, we're like, we got it. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I do want to really point that out as a takeaway for our listeners, because I think to go at something you're scared of without ego, you're going to go at it much freer and more fearlessly than you would otherwise. If you're like, oh God, I can't fall. If I fall, everyone's going to laugh at me. And I can't, if I fail, how am I going to go talk to people? How am I even going to go to dinner with my friends?
Yeah.
You know?
And can I tell you, you're so much more interesting person to talk to. Have you done things and then failed than just not doing
anything? It's true.
Like you're a better conversation at a dinner party.
It's true.
If you tried something, it's more interesting.
It's true.
Or, you know, it's that part of it is so ego is, that's a whole nother episode.
I love it. It's a whole nother. And on part two of Climbing in Heels, Melinda Spiegel, Melinda Maria. I love
Rachel,
you very much.
Legend.
I love you.
Legend.
I'm so happy for you. And if for some reason you don't know Melinda Maria Jewelry, you need to, because it's the thing that you need to buy for yourself, everyone in your life, but also like it's okay to spoil yourself with Melinda Maria because
$68.
Yeah, $68 for a diamond tennis necklace or earrings. And by the way, it's fucking beautiful. Like sister literally took the earrings out of my ears the other day.
Oh, I need to send her a package.
Oh my God. Oh, don't worry. We'll be in your living room this week. She's here for another 5 days. All right. I love you madly.
We're going to catch up by phone now.
See you tomorrow. Okay. Bye. It's that time in the show when I answer two listener questions. So let's see what we have today. What is one piece you are investing in for the spring? You know, my answer to that is usually a great new bag that I can carry like through the season and always that I don't get sick of, because you'll never regret, you know, a really good bag. You'll wear it forever. But truthfully, I'm starting to lean more on fresh, like new jewelry, like a big piece of jewelry for me that sort of changes anything. And I find that when I get a new pair of like really big statement earrings, I find that I just keep throwing them on over and over. And I wear them with jeans and a leather jacket, or I wear them with a suit, or I wear them with a cocktail dress, and it makes every look better. So I'm here to say, like, whatever that is for you, like a big necklace or just a great pair of earrings, I think it's a game changer for any season, not just spring. Okay, what are your tips for sourcing vintage or resale pieces? I have a lot of tips. It's almost like an episode in itself. But I would say that if you're looking for just special pieces to add some flavor to your sort of daily uniform, that you don't care if they're designer or collector's pieces, it's a lot easier. Because then you just go to your local vintage store and just scour and like, you know, get as many great pieces as you can for as little money as you can. But it's different if you're collecting like I do, because I'm actually looking to buy very wisely and look for a piece that's in perfect condition, that's priced well, but not too high, that it'll still appreciate. And that's sort of more of my method. So it really depends on if it's for your everyday life and you don't care about the label and you just want special pieces, because then that's really fun. And you can go to, you know, flea markets and thrift stores and Army Navy supplies and like things like that and find really good treasures. But otherwise, you know, if you're doing something like the Real Real or Vestiaire, one of those, or Rebag, then you have to go to trusted sources like that. And it should be, you should just scour for the thing you're dying for that you didn't want to spend the money on, but now will be marked down because it's pre-owned. And that's sort of, I think, the best approach for that. You have to be focused or you're just going to start buying things you don't need or want. Okay. Don't forget to submit your questions for next week's episode. All you have to do is DM us your questions to @ClimbingInHeelsPod on Instagram, and I may just answer your question. I want to thank Melinda so much for being on the pod today. I had so much fun. I thought I knew everything about her. I clearly don't. Her story is even more amazing than I actually even remembered. And I think she really downplays it. Like, it's not something she wears on her sleeve. And I think the more I sort of was pulling back the layers of how she got to be, I was so incredibly impressed at not only what she's achieved with her business, but how scrappy, how painful, how many falls she had to keep getting up, and really just sort of like the journey here, which is why I started Climbing in Heels. And I think in this episode, you really see how important the journey is into creating not only your business, but what kind of parent you are, what kind of person you are. But I think the greatest takeaway of all the things, truthfully, for me, is check your ego, because it will only drive to more success and less fear. And also, it's okay for your kid to wait to be picked up. That's a big parent takeaway, because there's this vicious cycle now of our kids being so coddled and not feeling any adversity. And I'm honestly guilty of it. I am. But I'm starting to see the adults that that creates. And it's not always amazing, honestly, because they don't know how to deal with challenges. And, you know, we're going to end up with a bunch of 25-year-olds that still need to call us 20 times a day to do anything. And that's not what we are trying to do, I don't think, as parents. I know I'm not. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Please don't forget to write a review wherever you get your podcasts. I loved this episode. I hope you did too. I love reading your comments and your reviews. And while you're at it, follow me on @RachelZoe and @ClimbingInHeelsPod on Instagram for more updates on upcoming guests, episodes, and all things Curator. I'll see you next week. Mwah.